This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow.
See if you recognize this slogan. Eat food, not too much, and mostly plants. Who said that? Do you remember? Yeah. You do that, huh? That's Michael Pollan's mantra, if you recognize that. But it's also really come into vogue for believers in veggies, whole grains, and probiotics. But guess what? Way back in the 1880s, just up the road a piece here in Battle Creek, Michigan, the surgeon and missionary John Harvey Kellogg, he was preaching the same principles to his patients at the Battle Creek Sanitarium. Kellogg claimed that God had chosen him to make the world a healthier place. He considered meat a death sentence and kept a vegetarian wolf to show off at lectures. We'll talk about that a little more. He warned of the dangers of tobacco smoking, and he invented health foods like nut-based protein patties, soy milk, peanut butter, and of course, cornflakes, which his brother W.K. Kellogg brought to your breakfast table each morning, as they say on the commercial. Science historian Howard Markell is here to give us the story of these two visionary brothers and their innovations in wellness long before science caught up with them. Howard Markell is the author of An Anatomy of Addiction and a forthcoming book on the Kellogg brothers. He's also professor and director of the Center for the History of Medicine at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. Welcome back to Science Friday,
Howard. It's great to be here, Ira.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Looking back at John Harvey Kellogg's ideas, was this guy, was he ahead of his time or what?
He was really ahead of his time, and he was often right, even for the wrong reasons, but he was a remarkable visionary.
What do you mean, for the wrong reasons?
Well, you know, you mentioned John Harvey was a missionary. He was a Seventh-day Adventist. They were the group that founded Battle Creek, or were original settlers there, and he had all sorts of religious connections to his medical thoughts. But then as the science developed, he was very astute at reading the latest scientific discoveries, and he would match those scientific discoveries to his ideas about vegetarianism, mm-hmm. avoiding tobacco and alcohol, and living a good, full life.
Let's talk about some of these dietary innovations. If I were at the sanitarium, I could be there any time now.
I'll take you. It's right up the road.
Well, give me a typical meal. What would a meal at the sanitarium be like?
Well, originally, they even served meat, but John Ooh. Harvey quickly stopped that. But it was all vegetarian and grain-based. There was, and John Harvey was very interested in making things palatable because, you know, mush is mush. And so he would create things. And first he wanted a grain bread based on graham crackers and graham wheat. And he made this hard biscuit that a woman actually broke her tooth on and threatened to sue him.
Wow, not good for publicity.
No, so that's where he came up with flaked cereal foods because
he took the same brand bread and flaked it.
Right, right.
And that created the cereal?
Well, there was a lot of steps in between. Yeah. And it took a lot of trial and error. And he took all sorts of wheat doughs and other grain doughs, and it all made a gummy mess. He tried to flake it off and knife it off and things. And one day, well, depending on who tells the story, he claims he was called off to surgery. His brother Will, who did all the dirty work, claims he just got tired and went home for the night. And the dough became moldy. It tempered, is what it's called. A certain amount of water leaves the grain, and it will then, once you bake it, flake. And that was the eureka-like moment. And then they toasted it, and then they served it, and it became cornflakes.
They eventually put it in a box.
They put it in a box. A lot of boxes.
A lot of
yeah.
boxes. But he did invent quite a few health foods, didn't he?
He did. He, you know, he loved nuts, and some people called him a nut. But he made all sorts of nut-based foods, nut patties that were meat substitutes, and, of course, he invented peanut butter. He invented peanut butter. Not jelly, but he invented peanut butter.
He only got it half right.
And he was not the creator, but certainly one of the great developers of soy milk. Long before Starbucks, he was serving soy milk at his table.
We have a recording Dr. Kellogg made in 1923. You have to listen carefully because it's an old recording. He made a series of 78 records. On the very first, this is actually, one of these is the very first workout tape. Listen to him giving instructions to his people who are in his, I guess, in the room. He's teaching how to do the workout. And see if you can channel Jane Fonda in this. So we'll listen to that now.
At count one, reach the arms forward. At count two, try to touch the toes. With count three, four, return to position. Breathe out going forward. Breathe in while returning to position. Ready? Begin. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four.
So was this a big hit, that these series of 78s?
Well, I much prefer Jane Fonda, but, but it was a big hit, and I have the album. I bought it on eBay. It's about 1278 RPMs,
right.
And it probably was the first, it was an exercise record, but it was the first exercise tape. And he loved brass music, and you hear that band music. And in fact, at the sanitarium, he would lead all of the patients in a grand march and breathing exercises every day at 6 p.m.
Wow. And he was also an inventor. He made something called the lumbar chair.
He did. It was an ergonomic chair, and it had that little lumbar bump, and it's called the Kellogg chair. I've sat in it. I have some back problems, so I really wish I had one. And he even tried to, he made a portable version that he tried to interest Franklin D. Roosevelt into using in his presidential car.
Right. But I also know from reading your writings and his work, he had what you might call a healthy obsession with bowel movements, didn't he?
Oh, my, yes.
We'll be very euphemistic here about that.
Well, we are on Science Friday, so we'll
we're very clinical, and we respect that.
He was obsessed, and his great enemy was constipation.
See how they all relate to that? See, they're laughing with you.
Some things never change. And, and you have to imagine the American diet before John Harvey Kellogg came along, because everybody ate heavily fried, fatty foods. Men drank a lot of alcohol, a lot of coffee drinking, a lot of boiled over foods. No wonder the entire country had a stomach ache. And frankly, they were all constipated as well. And famous people were constipated. Warren Harding was constipated. Calvin Coolidge was constipated. The John D. Rockefeller Jr. And they all came to Battle Creek Sanitarium. And he would clean them out, so to speak. He had a lot of ways of doing this. Enemas were one of the favorites. It gets worse. But the big problem he worried about is that if you ate bad foods, particularly meat, it would fester in your gut and putrefy and cause auto intoxication. And that was not only constipation, but nervousness and a bad attitude and difficulties with life, and probably every problem you could imagine was attached to it.
So he decided you'd better get rid of this all multiple times a day, right?
Yeah, you know, he observed gorillas. He went to zoos and wrote Zookeepers all over the world, and it's in his correspondence. And he wanted to know, how many times does a gorilla poop? And he figured it was about 4 to 5 times a day, and he thought that was the ideal.
So he said to his patients, you should be pooping 4 or 5 times a day?
Yeah, yeah, and he ate nothing but apples and nuts, and so I assume he pooped 4 or 5 times a day. And not all of his patients were so successful, but he thought that was the ideal, yeah.
This is a good point to remind our audience that we have a couple of microphones here. If you have questions, maybe about your own movements or something, might get some free nonsense.
Yeah.
You passed over something quickly but very interesting, because now that we're talking about this stuff, you talked about enemas and an unusual kind of enema that he invented.
Well, there was a special enema room in the Battle Creek Sanitarium.
A room.
And he invented a special enema machine that could deliver many quarts of fluid per minute. But he liked to give yogurt enemas.
Yogurt.
And I assume he liked to receive yogurt enemas as well.
Yeah. Any kind of yogurt? I mean, is
well,
any
flavor?
It wasn't
Dannon or anything like that. I think he made his own in the Battle Creek Sanitarium kitchen. But it was he had read Nobel laureate Metchnikoff, for example, an immunologist who was very impressed by the men and women in Georgia, in Russia, who ate nothing but yogurt, and he was impressed by what lactobacillus did to the gut. You were talking about microbiomes before.
He was early on there.
Yeah, and so he really, he was doing all this not with any of the techniques you're just talking about with your former guest, but just by morphology. And by feeding patients certain types of bacteria, they seem to do better than those who ate other bacteria. And the lactobacillus of yogurt seemed to really help these people along.
Probiotics, sort of.
Probiotics.
He was doing probiotics. If he were around today, would he be into fecal transplants, you think?
I bet he would. I bet he would. He'd certainly be on TV hawking probiotics, yeah. Because he was a great showman, and he loved to sell his stuff.
Did he ever come out with his own line of yogurt with the right
They did the
cereal. How about the yogurt?
He came out with tons of food products and health, and they were all health food products, and they were called Battle Creek Foods or Kellogg's Foods. And he later found that soy milk actually grew better lactobacilli and acidophilus than cow's milk or yogurt. And so he really became fascinated with that product by grinding up soybeans and diluting it with water. And he helped save the lives of the Dion quintuplets, the most famous children
that.
In the world in the 30s.
Yeah,
these were real quintuplets, no fertility drugs. And they were premature, and they had all sorts of bowel problems, as premature infants often do. And there was a famous young doctor named Alan Defoe who treated them. And Kellogg had his driver take some soy milk up to Callander, Ontario, fed the babies nothing but soy milk, and they got better.
Wow. And he also had a solarium, right? A sunroom?
He did. It was in the center of the sanitarium. It was called the Palm Garden. He grew bananas and coconuts and other tropical fruits that he loved to serve in the dining room. And also the patients of the sanitarium would come there and, you know, get the rays of the sun, which is very common in Battle Creek, Michigan, particularly in February.
Just like today.
And enjoy them. They're very much like today.
And so there were a lot of... He got the real moneyed and intelligentsia of the country came there, right?
Absolutely. I mean, he attracted, you know, thousands and thousands of people, but he was very good at attracting famous people because he gave them free room and board. And Thomas Edison and Henry Ford and John D. Rockefeller Jr., who for some reason loved free room and board.
they couldn't afford it.
All these famous people came to the... Eddie Cantor, the comedian, came there as well. Yeah.
And so how long... you say the sanitarium is still going.
Well,
is it his? No,
the sanitarium closed in 1943.
I see.
And the federal government bought the building. It is still there. It is a federal government building. It's the Dole Hart Inouye Federal Center. But you can go there and see a lot of things that still exist, the dining room. Some facilities are now just bureaucratic office buildings. But if you use your imagination, you can kind of figure out. I literally drove right by it today. I actually did take the time to stop off just so I'd get in the mood for coming here today.
What impressed you most about your research about the Kelloggs? What was the thing that struck you the most? Was it their entrepreneurial spirit? Was it the fact that they were, you know, before their time, where they would be at home today in the way we think about healthful eating?
Well, two things. Certainly, it's the invention of wellness, and that's really three things. We'll take that. But the idea that John Harvey and his brother Will were raised in a very religious background, and how religion as an authority changed in the 19th century to science in the 20th century, their work really represents that. And then finally, both the brothers, John Harvey the doctor, was brilliant for all the reasons we just discussed, but Will was the one who made that cereal company hum.
Wow.
And that's no easy task, and he was brilliant as the great cereal king of the world.
Just read it on the box. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Thank you. Let's go to the audience. There must be some questions of interest there. Yeah.
Hi. You talk a lot about the fact that he was respected amongst the wealthy and famous at his time. What about the scientific community at the time? Were they recognizing anything he was doing as legitimate or interesting?
Yes and no. You know, Dr. Kellogg was almost kicked out of the Calhoun County Medical Society because in the 1880s because his theories were so unorthodox. Fortunately, it came down to a vote, and it was a tie until John Harvey Kellogg voted, so he did not get kicked out. A lot of doctors looked askance at what Dr. Kellogg was suggesting, but he was also very good at sidling up to some of the greatest scientists of the day, Alexis Carrel and Thomas Edison and Walter Buchanan, the gastric physiologist. He was a good friend of Ivan Pavlov's and went to St. Petersburg to see his lab. He was so impressed, he hired Pavlov's chief assistant to run his lab back in Battle Creek. So it depended on who you spoke to, but he was very good at getting in with the right people.
Howard, what about mythology? Is there stuff that people say that the Kellogg brothers did that they really didn't do? You know, chewing your food 40 times, that sort of thing?
No, that they did.
They did that.
That they did. That was called Fletcherizing.
Fletcherizing?
A friend of Kellogg's named Horace Fletcher said that you'll digest your food better if you chew it 40 or more times. And there's a point to that. The amylase in your salivary glands will blend with the food and break it down a bit. They even had a chewing song, chew, 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 that's the thing to do. And I didn't write that.
Get the Glee Club to work on that here, maybe.
John Harvey Kellogg wrote that. I actually found the music in the archives and had to get somebody to play it for me so I could do it right here. And
you did it very well.
Thank you.
We have to take a break. When we come back, lots more on John Harvey Kellogg. Stay with us. This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about the Kellogg brothers and the history of health foods with Howard Mark Kell, author of An Anatomy of Addiction. We have a question in the audience. Huh? Let's go right over there.
Yes. So I was wondering, this sort of reminded me of the movie Road to Wellville. Hearing some of this story. Have you seen that, and how well does that film capture some of
it? I have seen it, and it's based on a wonderful novel by T.C.
Tell us about it. People haven't
Well, T.C. Boyle wrote a wonderful novel called The Road to Wellville. The Road to Wellville, by the way, is a little footnote, was actually an advertisement that C.W. Post of Post Toasties used.
Rival.
It had nothing to do with, when the Kellogg's hated the Post. Because C.W. Post basically stole all their recipes. He was a patient at the sanitarium and stole all the
recipes. Was that how that happened?
And then made Post. Yeah. I hope there's no Post employees in the audience.
Well, their lawyers might be here. So what?
But anyway, The Road to Wellville is a wonderful novel, and Boyle did wonderful research. And he then blends it with a lot of imagination of things that are invented. And that would take another hour to explain. But as a historian, I think the real story is even better. But there's a lot of things in the Boyle novel and the movie that ring very true.
It's a good question. Thank you. One of the techniques I mentioned at the beginning, we were going to talk about the wolf story. Before we go, tell us the wolf story.
The wolf story is
a great one. He's cackling about the wolf.
Well, John Harvey Kellogg loved animals of all kind, and he caught a wolf on the sanitarium grounds. This was many years ago, and he fed the wolf nothing but vegetables and grains. And the wolf became very docile and friendly. And John Harvey Kellogg had 42 adopted children. He never had any of his own, but he had. And the children loved the wolf. They played with the wolf and they frolicked with the wolf. And so John Harvey Kellogg would have a weekly lecture for his sanitarium guests. It was a big deal. It was called the Question Box Hour. And guests would ask questions like they are tonight. And he brought this wolf out in a iron-clad cage and started feeding the wolf meat. He had done this a few days before. Now, some say he starved the wolf before the lecture, but as he fed the wolf more and more beefsteak, the wolf became more wolf-like and more scary. And he said, you see, this is what happens when you eat meat. If you eat like an animal, you are an animal. And he was really saying, you know, you are what you eat. And it was a really very powerful way to show that off.
Yeah. Now, I think before we go, we might have time for one question from the audience. Yes, sir.
Henry Ford was known to want to serve guests at his house everything made of soy.
Yes.
Was Henry Ford an influence on Kellogg in this way or the other way around?
Well, it depends on where you go. If you go to the Henry Ford Museum or you go to the Ann Arbor, Kellogg claims he introduced Henry Ford to the soybean. Ford says the opposite. But in fact, Henry Ford sent his chef to the Battle Creek Sanitarium to learn how to cook the Kellogg way. But they both shared that fascination with the soybean. Henry Ford, not only in terms of eating it, but making all sorts of products, knobs and accelerator buttons and so on for his automobiles. So they shared that love of the soybean, yeah.
Well, fascinating, Howard. Thank you. Howard Markel is author of the forthcoming book on the Kellogg brothers. We should look for that soon.
Yeah, wait a while. I hope I get it done.
I'm traveling here all the time. I don't know where I am at the time. So
he's also professor of director of the Center for the History of Medicine at the University of Ann Arbor. Thanks. Good to see you again.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here.